Before we get going with today's podcast, I just want to jump on here for a second and personally invite you to a one-off brand new masterclass that I am hosting on Thursday, the 16th of May. How to scale your online business to six figures and beyond. So if you are a course creator, a membership owner, or a coach, then this is for you. I'm sharing with you my most effective strategies to become the go-to person in your industry and grow your online business. I will cover how to build your audience, how to craft an irresistible offer, and how to master your launch strategy so that you will know the most effective way to grow your audience and build your email list fast, know how to craft an offer that your audience will love, and create a launch that fits with you and enables you to sell with ease. And why should you come and listen to me? Well, I started doing this almost 10 years ago. And the very first client I worked with back in 2016, I helped him launch his very first membership. He had a done-for-you product and a one-to-one product. And we created a membership. In his first launch, he got 130 members, bringing him in about $60,000 in income every year. Now, he has built a suite of online products that is bringing him in way over six figures every single year. This is going to be an awesome masterclass. You're going to get so much good stuff to take away with you to be able to use in your business. So to grab your free place, go to teresaheathwaring.com/masterclass and I will see you there. You are listening to the Marketing That Converts podcast, episode 118. You are listening to the Marketing That Converts podcast, and I'm your host, Teresa Heath-Waring. If you're a marketer, business owner, or entrepreneur that is frustrated and overwhelmed with all the constant changes in digital marketing and social media, then you, my friend, are in the right place. Each week, I share with you easy, insightful, and actionable steps that you can use to grow your business. So let's get started. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the podcast. This week we have an interview and I was really excited about this one because basically one thing that I tell you I am not very good at is copywriting. It doesn't thrill me very much. However, one thing I am really keen on is an authentic voice. So how to get that balance between the right kind of copywriting and still be authentic can be really, really tricky. Which is why I had Kira Hug come onto the podcast and talk about this. So let me explain who Kira is. So Kira is the co-founder of the Copywriter Club and the co-host of the Copywriter Club podcast. She's also a conversion copywriter specialist and has a proven driven launch copy. So basically, she's worked with the likes of James Wedmore and Rick Mulready and helped them write their copy for their launches. And as you know, I have been in some of James's programs and therefore very possibly read what Kira wrote. She helps small business owners package their weird following her signature weird trifecta framework. So what I really liked about her is that she talks about you talking in your authentic voice and showing your personality. So often when you can think about a copywriter, it can sometimes sound and feel a little bit almost too perfect or just like it's been copywritten. And one thing that she embraces is she works with people to help them find their weird, to help them find the thing that makes them different. So in this episode, we talk about what makes you different and unique. And one thing that's really interesting that I can't wait for you to listen to is she talks about the good and the bad and how the bad could be used for good. Sounds weird, but I promise it all makes sense. And then she talks about how we connect with our audience through those things, through showing our personality. The other thing Kira talks about, which is really helpful, is how to get that confidence when sharing about us. Now, obviously, you're going to share what you're comfortable with. So she's not going to sit there and say, you have to do this and have to do that. However, as business owners and as lots of you listening are solopreneurs, you are your business. So getting comfortable with showing who you are is really, really important. So that's really helpful as well. I found it really interesting. Like I said, I am not a copywriter. It's not something I'm brilliant at, but one thing I am really passionate about is that authenticity. So Anyway, give it a listen. Let me know what you think. Tag us in. I can't wait to hear what you think. So here we go. Here is Kira. So I am really excited today to welcome to the podcast the very lovely Kira Hug. Kira, welcome.
Hi, Teresa. Thank you for having me.
No problem. Not at all. It's really good to have you here. So Kira, in case my audience don't know you and they've not heard of you before, tell me a bit about how you got to do what you're doing today, because it's a really fascinating subject and I'm really excited to dive in. But just tell us like how you got to do what you do today.
Okay. All right. So today I write personality-driven copy that converts. How did I get into that? I came from a marketing background. So I had worked at various startups and nonprofits running their marketing team, promoting memberships, promoting events, and writing a lot of copy, plus doing a lot of other things. And I was, you know, secretly trying to start this side hustle, like many of us do, and pursuing all the interests. I started a blog about being tall because I'm tall, and I thought that could be something that stuck. But like, there are only so many things you can say about being tall. Then I started, during that time, I got married, and so I hated the wedding process. And so I started a podcast and a blog called Bridal Rebellion. And that was like a side hobby slash possible business that I turned into a service and had offerings. But it didn't, like, these ideas didn't really have legs along the way, but it was still fun and allowed me to tap into this online world back in 2008. And so along the way, as I was working these marketing jobs and writing copy for my colleagues, and even writing copy for people who were kind of like contractors working with my startup, I had one of my friends say to me, like, why are you doing all these side hustle jobs that don't actually pay you money? Why don't you just write copy? Because you're a copywriter. And she had already hired me to write her website copy. Other colleagues had hired me to write their website copy, but it's like, I couldn't see it because I was just in it until she came to me and said, you're a copywriter. This is your business. You're making money. Do it. And so from there, it was like, that was the light bulb moment. And I just went all in. I still, you know, continued to work at this marketing startup and kind of just eased out. I didn't take the leap necessarily. I took a couple months to scale down and then rev up the copywriting business that just continued to take off. And that was back in 2015 when I started. And then I went full time in April of 2016. And then ever since then, it's just been growing that business, working on various launches, but all of it has been grounded in like, how can we write copy that reflects your personality and stands out? And then even since then, I started a second business, which is the Copywriter Club, where I get to work with other copywriters and help them embrace their personality and build businesses. So I kind of have these two different worlds that overlap, but allow me to just really kind of allow people to be more of who they are and show that in their business.
Yeah. That's awesome. I have to ask a question though, because you said it. You said you wrote a blog because you're tall. How tall are you?
I am 5'10", although I said I was 5'11" the other day. My mom seemed offended. She's like, you're not 5'11". I'm 5'11". So I guess I'm 5'10". I'll stick with that.
Okay, cool. So tallish, yeah, I guess.
I'm tallish, tall enough to start a blog about that. But I remember talking to Danielle Laporte at the time, had these coaching sessions, and I had hired her to like have this one-off coaching session to talk about my tall blog. And I remember her saying to me, she was like, I think you're going to run out of things to talk about. And she was so nice about it. But I was like, yeah, you're right. And she was right. I ran out of things to talk about.
I love it. And also, I love the fact that like you did that and then you did the wedding thing and then you did something else and then you did something else. Like I feel like there are different entrepreneurs and creators in this world where like, for me, I literally was a really good employee. And then suddenly one day my brain went, and then without even knowing, I ended up having my own business and thinking, what the hell am I doing? And then some people like you who are just like, I want to do this. And there's this opportunity here. And there's this thing here. And shall I do this? And to just kind of have those things on the go. Like, I don't remember doing anything when I worked, like didn't have a blog, didn't have a podcast, didn't have anything. So it was obviously kind of inbuilt in you in terms of like, this was your thing.
I think so. And I think there was just my jobs weren't satisfying that creative need I had inside. They just weren't, I wasn't satiated, which forced me to like keep jumping and taking these side gigs, which looking back, that was good. But at the time it was also frustrating being in a couple corporate jobs where I was like, oh, like, do I really want to be here? Do I want to grow here? This just isn't where I see myself.
Yeah. Okay. So I love what you talk about, right? Because one of the things I talk about all the time is being authentic and being yourself. And one thing that's happened in lots of industries, and it's happened in mine, is people see something that's working. So someone comes into the industry with a quirk or with a style or with a something, and they see it working, and then everybody jumps on that bandwagon. And what they don't realize is it's working for that person because it's totally authentic as to who they are, and they eat, sleep, breathe the way they're being, and the others aren't like that. And therefore it's not the thing that people like, it's the authenticity that people like. So I love the way that you talk about celebrating things authentic and how you kind of address that in authentic copy. So tell us, like, explain that. How do I, because one, I don't like writing, so probably not a great start, but how do I get that out? How do I get that personality out? If I'm sat listening to this and thinking, I don't think people know who I am.
Well, it's funny that you don't like writing, because I love your headline on your about page, which is about, I love tea, and by tea, I mean gin. Well written. Okay, so I help people figure out what makes them weird, because this is such a big struggle for all of us. And this isn't even easy for me. I oftentimes get assistance to figure out what makes me weird too. So I've worked through this process because I've gone through an identity crisis, that forced me to ask those questions like, what am I doing? How can I show up at home? How can I show up in business? Yeah. So I've kind of worked through that personally and business wise. But I think it really starts off with like looking at three core areas of your brand, and I call it your weird trifecta framework. Yeah. And so these three core areas are, you know, based in your personality. Your personality is a huge piece of that. And within your personality is your voice, how you talk, how you write is all about how you talk. That's where your quirks show up, what makes you unique, what makes you different, the good and the bad. And so personality isn't just like the positive things, which I think we often think it is. It's like, oh, these are the best qualities of my personality. Mm-hmm. Also, like, these are the darker qualities of your personality. These can be some of the aspects of your personality that maybe you aren't excited about. Maybe you're working on them. So I think that's where your honesty comes in. And you had mentioned earlier, you know, you like to be honest. And so I think being honest about your personality is key. And that's where most of us kind of mess up, right? We don't get really honest about who we are. The other two areas, one is values. So your values reflect your messaging, what you care about, what you fight for, what you fight against, what you stand for. And those really strong viewpoints, basically, right? It's like your why behind everything you do. So it's personality, values. And then the third area that I focus on in the weird trifecta is your advantage. What is your genius? You know, you could call it superpower, secret sauce, whatever you want to call that. But what is that for you? Because everyone has it. It's really hard to see it when you do it naturally. So this is oftentimes where I focus the most time working with clients to figure that out. And also part of that is like looking at your competition, because it's sometimes you don't see your advantage until you do check out your competitors, which I'm always surprised that more business owners I talk to don't really do that well or don't pay attention to it because we want to get in our bubble. But looking at the space to understand how you fit into it is key. So those are the three core areas, personality, values, advantage, that we work through. And part of that process is just asking questions that pull that information out, right? Questions are the most powerful part of that exercise to get that information.
So let me touch on that for a little bit, because I think this is really interesting, because I love the way you talk about weird, and yet I should imagine there's some people out there going, well, I'm not weird. And if they do think something's weird, they're like, God, I'm not showing that because I don't want anybody to see that weird. Like, you know, so I think that's really interesting. And I think what you started off by saying in terms of personality, in terms of the voice and those quirks, the good and bad, like, honestly, I just think, who would want to show the bad stuff? And why? Why would I want to show up some of my bad things? What does, and you have a great line on your site that says something like, even if you're a jerk and people still buy off jerks or something like that, which I just thought was like fascinating. But tell me a bit, like, how do you mean? How does that work?
Yeah. I mean, there are definitely some qualities in your personality or in your life that might be a bit darker that maybe you don't want to lead with. So there could be some, like, if you're like, I have visions of like stabbing people in the back. I mean, that
probably
could be a really good email copy, because I'd read that email, but maybe you don't lead with that. But the reason to do it is because it makes you, again, like real, authentic, standing. Mm-hmm. You'll stand out because most people don't talk about this stuff. The honesty builds trust. So it's a fast way to build trust with your community and your audience. It also is a great way to build rapport, because people will relate to that, because people will see, they understand their darker side and those traits in them. And if they see it in you, that builds a connection. And maybe they don't feel connected to everything in your personality, but if you can share more of your personality, they'll start to connect to bits and pieces of it, rather than if you just share one facet of your personality that you feel like you should be sharing. Maybe it's like, oh, I'm so creative, I'm going to just show my creative side. Sure, you'll attract creative people, but there's so many other facets to who you are that you could connect with more people and kind of grow your community that way. So I would look at things that are more relatable, that aren't as dark. Like for me and my business partner, we often joke like that I'm super sensitive and he has no feelings. And we talk a lot about that in our marketing messages. And you could say either one is negative. Being too sensitive, I don't necessarily feel proud of that. And I don't think he feels proud about like he has no feelings. But we joke about it and we turn it in and we talk a lot about those sides to us, because that's how we connect with our audience. By sharing those pieces. And all of that has its upside and downside, right? Being super sensitive has a downside. It can be it can immobilize you. Especially in my audience, a lot of copywriters can relate to that. So I talk about it often, but it also has a superpower. It allows you to build empathy and to see things other people don't see. So I think if you find other qualities that maybe you think you're not proud of, or maybe you're like, I don't like that about myself all the time, you can find the upside in everything, and talk, that becomes your advantage. So even like, if you told me three of your top weaknesses, I bet we could figure out how each of those three weaknesses actually has an advantage for you.
And do you think that's a lot to do with this perfect online space that we're in, that we are so tired of seeing the perfectness in the world and the beautifully coiffed hair and the lovely makeup and the look how in control I am all the time, that we just think, oh my God, we're complete failures. And actually we need to see that they struggle as much as we do.
Yeah, I think that's part of it, because that was, for so long, that was the look, right? It's like there were a couple icons in our space. I think we could probably think of the same people who genuinely are that way, have perfect hair, perfect skin, they're in control, and we love them for that. But then it's like a bunch of people saw that and wanted to be that too, even if it's not true to who they are. So I think there is kind of this rebellion against that now, which I'm so happy about, where you have people who are like, cool, that doesn't work for me. And they're seeing now that there are enough leaders in the space who are showing up in more of a real way and still doing well. So I think it's allowing us to kind of accept that, hey, maybe you don't have to be perfect to be successful in this space. And I mean, for me, I'm kind of like, if you looked at my desk right now, you'd be possibly appalled. There's three cans of seltzer. It's a mess. But that's who, like, for good or for bad, I'm not proud of it. It's part of who I am. I'm a messy artist. Like, that's it. And so I want to show that. So even when I'm thinking about, okay, I have a photo shoot coming up next week, like, how can I get my hair as messy as possible? Because that's more of a reflection of me than perfectly curled hair that looks like a piece isn't out of place. That doesn't reflect who I am. So if you are listening, you feel the same way, then get messy, get grungy, do that, like figure out how to show up in that way, as long as it's intentional, right? And it's just not showing up because I haven't combed my hair. We're teasing it to make it big.
I have to do it.
Wild.
Yeah. So like, I think this is something that I love actually, because I love the authenticity. I love the fact that people relate to me for different reasons. So I joke, half joke, that I'm a terrible mother because, you know, I am not Mother Earth. I will happily admit that. So that would potentially be one of my darker sides, you know, and don't get me wrong, for anybody calls the social services, my daughter is fed and well and cared for and loved. They are perfectly fine. But do I want to spend my Saturday mornings watching some sports thing or go to some club? No, I don't, thanks. And I do travel and I do work a lot. And, you know, so I guess, but what's useful is people connect with me for different reasons. So some people will listen to that and go, oh my gosh, you know, she runs a business and she has children and stepchildren and how does she manage? And like, she's real about it and she's not trying to make it all like, oh yes, it's so easy, because it is not easy. My stepson sat in another room and if he makes a sound, I'm going to kick his backside later. And they know the deal. But, you know, so it's about kind of showing those sides. So I get it, right? So I get it on an Insta story. I get like showing some realness and not always being perfect and whatever. How do I get that in my copy though? How do I write? So one thing, and actually I'm going to be totally selfish and pick your brain about, one thing I do is every Wednesday I write an email. Now, you guys listening, if you're on my email list, you know this, and I've talked about this before, that I write it. I have copywriters who do stuff for me. And one of my team members, she writes my show notes for the podcast every week. She's amazing because she's a copywriter and that's her skill. That's her superpower. And I decided that I wouldn't get her to write my emails for me because I was so adamant and passionate about it being my voice. And I know, as you will know, we've had emails from people that we follow and we know damn well it's a copywriter and it doesn't sound like them and it doesn't seem authentic and it sounds, just doesn't sound right.
I know resonate. Which copywriters, I can pick out which copywriter it is.
With I bet you can. Honestly, like,
oh,
I bet you.
I know who that is.
Yeah, because you probably hear that tone and think, oh, they write like that and that's their style. So I do this email every Wednesday and it's always me that writes it. I've sent it today. I've written one this morning. And how do I make sure my tone of voice is in that? And how do I make sure that my authenticity is in writing when I find it much harder to write than talk? So what, is there like skills? Is there particular tools? Is there like, do I need to make sure I write it in a certain way? How do you even start to try and get that in there?
I think the easiest way, which I know you've heard before, is I would just take even what you just shared with me about being and using the language you're using, whether you like it or not. Like, I'm a terrible mom. I have my son tied up in the back room. He knows not to speak, or I'm going to kick him in the back because he knows that like business is business. So you said it really elegantly and it was so natural, and it does show a different facet of you, which I didn't know. Right. So like, I feel more connected to you because how many times have I thought I'm a terrible mom? And so I don't relate to the mommies who are like perfect on Instagram. I actually despise most of them, which is, I know it's messed up, but I'm more drawn to people who are like, yeah, I'm not great at this, but I'm trying to figure it out every day. So I think that draws people in. And you had a story that was kind of short. You could probably elaborate a little bit more on like where your son is, if he's in the other room, what is he doing, why this is important to you. And like, that could be the start of an email. And so for you, it's just recording what you're sharing already. You probably have so much content in your podcast interviews that are personal stories about your life that you could just scour through and pull some of those stories. And that becomes the first paragraph or two of an email. And then you connect the dots to what you're going to sell or your offer or the value you're providing. But it's a great way to kind of build that story, show a little bit, a glimpse of who you are without, it doesn't have to be, 600 words or 1,000 words about that, if that's not the focus of it, but it's more of like a lead in your email to show a glimpse of who you are, to build that connection, to allow your audience to identify with who you are. And then you can go in whatever direction you want. You can connect the dots to any idea from there. So oftentimes it's like, I'm connecting the dots between my personality and something that's a little bit more intimate, and then where I want to go, which is oftentimes an offer and something I'm selling or maybe it's a podcast episode I want to share, and I'll connect the dots between those two different ideas.
So two things then. How do you know when you're oversharing and telling too much? Because that is like, you know, I have to say there's been some content out there that, and obviously I see lots of people's content, and some stuff I think you're amazing and that's wonderful and you're very brave, but I couldn't do that. And other stuff I think, oh, I probably share too much on that front because I do whisper on about family and kids and dogs and whatever it is. So where's the line, or is there even a line?
Yeah, that's the tough part. I'm always asking that for, I mean, my clients ask me that, and I'm wondering that even for my own business and brand as I write and share more, which is challenging for me too. I feel like it's a balance between what's important to you and asking yourself that. Like, is it important for people to know more about your life or your family or your hobbies and interests or your relationship with your husband? Is that important to you, or could you care less and you feel like that's off limits? And I think just knowing what's off limits and what's fair game and setting those boundaries for yourself to start really helps, knowing that that will change. So a couple of years ago when my kids were younger, I really didn't talk about them much. Mm. I didn't write about them. And only recently, they're, you know, 7 and 5 now, I'm talking about them more and writing about them more because to me, it's like, how could I not? I learn lessons from them that I want to share. This is my life. And so knowing that this will change and that's okay. You don't have to set boundaries and rules that will stick for the next 5 years. It'll change from quarter to quarter. And then beyond that, I think it's a nice mix of the two. So for me, if someone reads an email where I'm kind of sharing, getting a little bit vulnerable, and they don't like it, which people don't. I had someone recently say, like, I'm not interested. They're not the right person for me. Like, I want to be in communion and in a community with people who do want to know a little bit about what my relationship is like with my kids, what I do at home when I'm not working, who want to see that. And for people who don't want to see that, then, like, cool, that relationship doesn't work for me. So you can leave. But there is a fine balance. So for me, it's like, I don't want every email I write and send to my list to be about my life, to be all me, me, me. So it's like rotating and figuring out your content to make sure, oh, this is actually about you. I'm talking all about you, all about your problems, all about what you want to get out of this business and your life. And then maybe every third email is more a glimpse into your life and sharing more about who you are. So figuring out that balance, for some people, it is more about them. For other business owners, it's more about just the customers and providing that value and teaching. But I say it comes down to, like, what relationship you want to have with your audience.
Okay, that's awesome. So I've got someone who I'm working with at the moment who, quite honestly, is terrified of putting themselves out there.
Yeah.
And this is not unusual. I could probably, like, pick a name immediately of people that I'm working with or have worked with who are like, I don't want to do that. So can we just touch on, like, why that's important and how to get a little bit comfortable with, and don't get me wrong, you know, the degree in which you share yourself is entirely up to you. It's up to, you know, if you're sat there listening going, I don't want to talk about my kids, then absolutely fine. Don't talk about your kids. But but we do buy off people, and I am a huge advocate of showing up and showing yourself, and so that I can get to know who you are, and if I'm going to buy your product or service, and especially what we do and what I do, you have to know if I am, because if you don't know me and you don't like me, then you're not going to want to work with me. So you've got to see me. So how do they get comfortable with, like I said, you know, actually showing up, and why do they need to do that?
Yeah. So the why behind it is important, because this isn't just for fun, and it's not just about, like, me sharing stories about what I do at home. The reason it's important is because of, it goes back to Eugene Schwartz, who created the concept around market sophistication in his book, Breakthrough Advertising, which is like the copywriter's Bible. And so he talks about the 5 stages of market sophistication, which are really critical here, because these 5 stages are basically telling us, like, where our audience is. Is it a saturated market? Have they already heard about similar offers to ours? How many competitors do we have? Are our customers jaded? Have they turned off because they're hearing the same message repeatedly? And so these 5 stages really help us evaluate, like, how do we fit in to the market landscape that we're playing in. And if you don't have a handle on that and you're wondering why people don't pay attention to you, it's probably because you're showing up in the wrong way and your messaging is off based off where your market is. So, I mean, I could talk through the five stages, but if we don't want to dig deep into that, the most important part is here with a lot of the businesses you and I work with, and probably a lot of the people listening, you're in stage five, which means that the typical messages about your offer and what you're doing have already been said. It means you're probably in a crowded space. So if you know you're in a crowded market space and it's loud and everyone's kind of saying the same thing, you're most likely in stage five, which is busy, crowded, and it takes a lot more effort and takes a different strategy for showing up. So in stage five, when your customers and your audience no longer can hear you when you're talking about an offer, no longer hears you when you're talking about the same benefits everybody else is talking about, and no longer hears you when you're talking about your unique mechanism and how you do things differently, because it's no longer different. So maybe like for a while it was like, oh, well, I have this course that has 8 modules and will help you get this goal. Yeah. And for a little while that was new, but it no longer is. So at this stage, what's most important is to allow your audience to identify with you. They need to kind of, identification is basically like allowing your audience to see what they want in their life in you as a brand personality, especially if you have a brand personality-based business, then they need to be able to see like their goals, their aspirations, what they're scared of through your brand and the messaging that you're sharing. And so in order to create that identification match, we need to share more of who we are. Because if we're not showing what's possible and kind of what we value, what we stand for, what we aspire to become, what we are today, then we aren't allowing our audience to identify with our brand. And that that disconnection then will hurt us in the marketplace, because someone else will do that and take your customers away, and they'll create that bond that you could create.
You're so right. Because honestly, in my world, in your world, there are a million people doing what we do.
Yep,
you know, you can Google it and get, you know, a gazillion results of people that do what we do. The only thing that stands out between us and them is us, like as individuals, that some people will love the way I teach, the way I talk, my honesty, my situation. They'll be able to relate with it. They'll be able to see it. And others, it will not resonate in the slightest, and they will not like what I do, or they won't like the way I do it, or they much prefer, you know, someone younger, older, you know, whatever the situation might be. They can then decide. But if they don't see me and they don't hear me and they don't know about me and know what personal stuff they can relate with, then they're not going to, are they? They're not going to be able to at least distinguish me against anybody else.
Yes. So yeah, you're right. It's definitely the point where you want to be more polarizing and attract the right people who are like, wow, I relate to what you're saying about parenting, and I relate to what you're saying about business in general. And then also, yeah, pushing other people away. And I think it's a good sign when you have those unsubscribes, and when you have those people who even spend time emailing you or writing about you to say, this doesn't resonate with me. And people get so offended about it. It's like, okay, cool. Then I'm not the right brand for you. There are other copywriters you could work with.
Yeah, absolutely. So, okay, what if they're too super terrified? How do they even get started? What's the kind of like first couple of steps that they should look at?
Yeah, that's such a great question. The first few steps I'd say are the first step is what we're talking about, like figure out what makes you weird. And the funny thing is, so many people say, well, I don't know. But when I ask people and they really think about it, they always can come up with an answer. At least the clients I work with, when I force them to think about it. So you already know what makes you weird, and you can answer it however you want. It's like what makes you eccentric or unique or different. If weird doesn't resonate with you, that's okay. And so start there. And again, don't edit, look at whatever those answers are. And it, maybe it's something that's good or bad. Just have no judgment around it. So I think it starts by understanding that piece of it. I have some questions I can share that I will ask my clients.
That would be awesome.
Trigger some responses and to help you figure out like what makes you different. One question would be, what's the most useless talent you have. If you were held at gunpoint and told that if you didn't impress them with your dance moves, you'd be killed, what dance moves would you bust out? What's the weirdest thing that a guest has done at your house? I mean, so these are pulling out more stories, but also answering, if you had to change your name, what would your new name be? And why would you choose that name? What's the strangest gift you've ever given or received? What if you were a color in a crayon box, what color would you be and why? So
I love these.
You can find hundreds of questions on the internet, which is the greatest thing about the internet.
Yeah.
So you can pull these questions if you aren't working with the copywriter who can extract this information from you, and start journaling on those answers just to kind of pull out this different side of you. So that's like piece one, is like figuring out. Yeah. Basics there. You don't have to figure out all of it out. I mean, we learn as we go who we are. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully in there you find a kernel that you're excited about, something that you're excited about that you want to share. So look for that piece that you're like, okay, I could talk about how the fact that like I don't feel like I'm always the best parent and I feel like I'm a terrible mom sometimes. I could share that because I really feel strongly about it and it's something I've wrestled with. And then just figure out like what is the next place you could share that would be easy to share it, where you might have more supporters than trolls. I mean, there are always trolls out there, but I would choose an outlet that feels a little bit easier. So maybe if it's, you have your Facebook friends, it could be a post you share there that's more of a story. It could be on your Instagram feed. I wouldn't necessarily post a huge article on Medium sharing this new revelation about what makes you weird, because you're exposing yourself to a lot of people that may make it a lot harder for you. So I share in a very comfortable atmosphere, probably on social media. Yeah. And I would start there before you start publishing anything to hundreds of thousands of people. So that would be a good step one, but it really is like, it takes practice. Mm-hmm. So once you do that, like do it again and do it again and do it again until you start to feel more comfortable sharing a little bit more. But the bottom line is every time you share something, it should feel uncomfortable. It should feel, you should, you know, wince a little bit. Every time I hit send on an email, I always feel queasy. And it's because I'm sharing a little bit more of myself and I'm like, oof, I don't know. This feels really uncomfortable. And I think that's a good sign.
But do you not find at those points, like whenever I've done that, whenever I've shared something that I've thought, or I've like shared something different or personal, that's when I get all the responses back. That's when I get people contacting me and saying things and replying to the emails and replying to my DMs. Like that's when you get people's attention, because A, it's not the same thing as everybody else is saying, and B, that's the stuff they resonate with, and then they can go, oh, I felt like that, or that happened to me, or I had the same situation, or what their take is on it. So I think when you are a little bit scared, even if one person says something horrible, the chances are like 20, 30 people are going to come back and say something nice. So who cares about that one person?
Yeah. And if you're writing something that is true to who you are and you can stand behind it no matter what, then I say, who cares? Like for me, it's therapy to just share those pieces. And if it resonates, great. But I'm also saying too, before you hit publish, I'm not talking about like the queasy, oh my gosh, is this going to be offensive? Like, am I going to get in trouble? Yeah. It's more like I have people edit my and review my emails, for instance, because I do edit to make sure that I've thought through what I'm saying. So it's not just like this knee-jerk reaction. I'm just going to, you know, puke up all these thoughts and vulnerabilities and just like send it out to the world because it feels scary. It's really more intentional, where like you're thinking about what you're writing. You have people who can view it and even review it before you hit send to offer different perspectives. But ultimately, you're still going to hit send once you've reviewed it to make sure that you're putting yourself out there and you're not hiding.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have the same. I have someone that reads my emails for me and just makes sure that like, is that all right? And I always kind of say to them, do you think that's okay? And they're like, yeah, that's cool. And, you know, and I knew if they would say, actually, I don't think you should, Teresa, that I would totally respect that. But I have to say, I agree. It gets easier and easier and easier. I remember for a long, long time, I wasn't willing to do that. I wanted to look perfect. We'd come from corporate world. It was a world where you weren't allowed to show, or it wasn't encouraged that you showed that side. You didn't talk about your children. You didn't talk about your home life. At lots of places I worked, you didn't talk about your home life. So I think it took a real while for me to get comfortable with it. And I think if you're just starting out, it's really easy to look at other people in the world who are doing this and think, well, it's easy for you. No, it wasn't. Like, I look at Jenna Kutcher and think, how the hell do you put yourself on camera without any makeup? Because I sure as hell wouldn't do that. And like, so for me, she's at a step that I'm not at. Like, I'm not there yet. She's way ahead of me. Now, do I ever want to get to that point? I'm not sure I do.
Because... But maybe you don't. Maybe you don't. I mean, we don't have to, like, maybe that's her path, but I don't know if I want to show up on camera without makeup. I love my makeup. I don't know if I aspire to do that, but I think maybe it's about choosing the channel that best fits you. So if it's your podcast and you share more of who you are on your podcast, for me, it's my podcast, sharing more of who I am on my podcast, and maybe also Instagram, because I am drawn to visual storytelling. But there are definitely areas where I see people showing up and it works for them. And I'm like, cool, but I don't have any interest in doing that right now.
So it's not a case of you just have to do it. So to finish off, I'm really conscious of our time. And thank you very much for giving me your time today. How do I turn this into converting? Like, so if I'm thinking of a sales page or a lead magnet or a, like, let's say in this podcast, I wanted to take you to buy, or in the show notes or whatever, how do I move that into converting without feeling like, I want to shower in bleach? Because, like, you know, telling a story and then going straight into buy my stuff, it feels a little bit uncomfortable.
That's true. Although, I mean, I think it depends on where you are in the sales cycle. So if you're in the middle of a launch, you know, then you probably shouldn't share as much personality in your copy. Mm-hmm. You should really focus on the audience and the reader and focus on them. And you, your voice will still be strong, but like, I tone it down. And I pull myself out of it a lot more when I'm talking about cart close. And it's just, and it's like, if you just think about cart close day of any offer, does your audience really want to hear about your story, about, even if it's best story ever, about whatever lesson you're teaching from that story? They don't, because for them, they need to know the basics. Like, how many hours do I have? What remind me of the transformation? What's going to happen if I don't buy this? So I just try to think about it in terms of like where I am as far as like the sales cycle. But if I'm away and it's more of like, let's say a weekly nurture email, just sharing some value with sharing your latest podcast episode, I don't have to create that scarcity and the urgency. Yeah. I don't have to focus on building this transformation. It's more of like, hey, this is a check-in. Like, let's have a conversation. So it's easier for me to share more of my personality and have a conversation while providing some value for the reader. So I think first start thinking about like where you are in that sales cycle and how much personality you really should share, because there is a line where it's like, it's not about you. It's not about you at all anymore.
No. And I think that's another interesting point, isn't it? Because I think sometimes I do often say, if I'm training or if I'm in the academy, you know, they don't care about you. And in what way they don't? Because what they're thinking about at that point is, like you said, what do I need to know? Why do I want this? Do you resonate with me? Do you understand me? But also in your messaging and in my emails every week and in my Instagram stories and whatever, I am showing them through my stories that I can relate to them, that I do understand where they're coming from, because I've been there, I've done that, I'm still doing it in some places. So showing that along the way can hopefully bring some of that in.
And also, like, when you are, let's say, in launch mode, or you are selling something, and maybe that's a time where you shouldn't be sharing the story, there are other ways that you can show your personality and continue to build your brand that aren't so in your face, because it, having that continuity really does help. So you don't go from like full on personality to like, oh, we're selling something. I have zero personality. So the opportunities, again, I'm going back to email because that's just more present in my mind, is like your hook. I mean, the first sentence or question statement in your email is something where you could turn your personality up because you've got to grab their attention. And you can grab their attention there with some piece of who you are or some piece of like what who they are. And then you can get into like more of the sale. Another opportunity could be your close, how you sign off your emails. I mean, so often we're just like, we never know how to sign off. It's like from, thank you, like cheering you on. That sign off is the best opportunity to show your personality. You can create a nickname for yourself. You can create like add a lyric to your favorite song. You can come up with like new words or phrases to sign off your email. And it's like one thing you could do to every email to keep people interested and kind of guessing and wondering like, okay, like what's next? Rather than a blanket sign off to all of your emails. So I always come up with a new sign off and I'm always looking for inspiration to keep those fresh and to make it fun and to add personality there. And even if your brand isn't like in your face, I want to be fun and playful because that's not everyone's brand, you can still pull in something into the hook or the sign off that grabs attention and that you have created new and is fresh every time you reach out to your audience.
You know, that's so interesting because one of the things I did when I started writing my Wednesday emails and I said to people, I'm not going to use a copywriter, I'm writing it. You're going to hear my true, authentic, slightly funny voice, is I said to them, I'm going to sign it off as I sign off to my friends because that's the way I want to treat you guys. So I, when I write anything to friends, I just put my name that my family call me or my stepchildren call me is T, literally just the letter T. And so therefore I sign things off tea and a kiss, like just one kiss and a capital T and that's it. So now every email I send is tea and a kiss. And it's like, because I wanted it to be, this is how I would be if I was your best mate and we were best together. So that's how I want to be. Cause I want to, that's how I see you guys. Cause the fact that you've come into my community and you're on my list, I love that. And, you know, I want to appreciate you and show you that through that way. So doing that teeny tiny little thing for me did feel like an element of my personality had come out in there. Although I do struggle, I have to say, like there are emails that I get that's like, hello, beautiful Teresa. And I'm like, like, honestly, I'm like, shut up. You never met me. You don't even know.
I do not back that up. Any emails or unless it's something that you, and I know what you're talking about. Like, hey, love, hey, like, gorgeous.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that. And I can't say I've never written that for clients, but if it's something or hey, darling, if it's something they truly say, I mean, from like working with clients, if my client really does say that, and that is how they speak to their friends, like you were saying,
it's
like,
authentic,
call me tea, then I will leave it. Also noting that, you know, you still have to pay attention to it because if everyone else is saying it and it's not authentic to them, but it makes you look inauthentic, even if it's true to who you are. So I think it's worth paying attention to that. And like, even if you are working with a copywriter and they add in a line like, hey, beautiful, like cut it out, edit that out. Yeah. That is not, that's not something you say, do not say that because it does turn off a lot of people and it's just overdone. And anytime anything you've seen it, you know, three times or more, it's overdone.
Yeah.
We can do better than that. But I think what you said about speaking to friends and if friends call you T, then like that's how you sign off your email. And I think for what our types of businesses and these brand personalities, thinking about your email copy, like would I send this to a friend?
Yeah.
Is this how I would
sign
off?
And what would they think?
And,
and does it sound like
what
me?
Would they think? Yes. And so for me, it's like add friends to your list. Because then you know that they're actually going to read these emails. And so I have a lot of my friends on my list because I know that will keep me in check. So I'm always writing with that friendly tone.
Yeah, no, I love that. I've got one final story to tell you and then a question that comes at the end of it. So I was having my website rewritten and a sales page rewritten and various things. And I was working with a copywriter I've known for a very long time. She isn't working with me at the moment. And we had calls together and we chatted and she was getting my tone of voice and she'd seen me speak and see me at an event and I'd spent like time with her. So she did know me pretty well. And she wrote one of my pages for me and she came back to me and was like, you know, do you want to read them and see what you think? I was like, yeah, cool. And it was all good and it sounded fine. And on one of the pages she wrote, I think it was like an about me type page. She wrote that I do this, you know, and the reason I do what I do is for my family and my children. And you know,
I had to go back to her and go, it's not true. I don't do what I do. I don't do it for them. Like, don't get me wrong. I love the fact that because of how hard I work and what we do, we get to do lovely things. And obviously I want my children to see that I work hard and, you know, do what you want to do and dream and, you know, but I genuinely couldn't sit here and go, I do this all for my family. And it's like, I don't. Like, and then when she was like, what hobbies do you have? That's why the gin thing initially came out. Because I did, it started years and years ago. I did a competition and to speak at an event. And it was an American event and I wanted to do a very British thing. And I thought, can I be a bit quirky here and be a bit of personality? It was one of the first times I ever showed it. We did this thing where I'm holding a teacup and I'm talking very British as I do because I am British. And then I was like, oh, I can't keep this up. This isn't tea in here. It's actually gin. I'm like, because I don't drink tea. I must be the only British person not to drink tea, but I flipping love gin. So when people say, what are my hobbies? I'm like, do you count drinking gin? Because that's one of my hobbies. Like, that's all I do. I work or drink gin. So it carries on. That theme carries on through everything I do because that is part of who I am. So yeah, so just quickly on that then, should you be getting a copywriter to write the bigger things for you? Should you be getting copywriters to write your sales pages and your website and that sort of thing? And how do you make sure that they get your tone of voice? Because like I said, bless her. And looking at her, she was beautiful and she was totally all into her family. And it was, and I just thought, no, that's you saying that. I'm not saying that.
That is your life, not mine. It is funny how our, you know, we reflect our values in our clients sometimes. Yeah, I mean, and also it's funny because when I read your website copy and I was checking you out, what drew me in where I was, the moment I was like, oh, I like you, was when I read about you drinking gin, just because I could totally see us drinking gin together.
Perfect.
And so that might repel some people who are like, I would never drink at all, or I don't drink gin.
Yeah.
But it attracts the people like me who are like, let's go to a bar right
now. Exactly.
So it does work. Oh my gosh, now I'm forgetting your question. I'm sorry. What was your question?
It's fine because we got distracted with gin.
I got distracted by gin.
So should you get a copywriter to do these things for you? Because obviously I don't have the writing skill or I don't think I do. So should we just be doing that or should we be trying to do this ourselves?
That is such a great question. And it depends on where you are in your business. I mean, there's definitely a stage where you're just getting started out and you might have to, if you don't have any money to invest, then you have to DIY it. But there are lots of copywriters who offer DIY programs or done with you programs where they can support you. And you might not do it for you, but they have good guidance. To me, I'm so biased, but I'd say, yes, this is one of the most important assets, marketing assets you have in your business. It's not one that you want to wait to invest in. So to me, it's like, think of the most critical places where clients will land and they will decide if they want to hire you or not. And it's your website. It might be a particular sales page. It might be a sales email sequence. But there are other areas you could write for now if you can't outsource all of it, which most people can't immediately, like your weekly emails, right? Where you really need to be authentic and connect with your audience. I think it's tricky, like even for me, we've been told in my business to outsource a lot of the copy because we have so much going on. And even for me as a copywriter, I'm like, I still wouldn't want to do that because I want to have my authentic voice in there. So figure out where, what you want to hang on to that feels really intimate and important. And you could possibly bring in a copywriter to optimize it, right? To add it, to maybe up your personality, to edit, to provide some feedback on how it can convert better, but you can still own it. And then there could be other areas like a long form sales page that takes forever and requires so much skill set and experience to do it well. That I would for sure hire someone to help me with it because that's a ton of work. And if you're launching something, you don't have the time to write a sales long form sales page that could take a month for a copywriter to write.
And we were just talking about this before we came on, the fact that you've written sales pages that I know I've viewed and purchased from. So well done.
Thank you.
It worked. But they are really important and they are massive. And when you look at the likes of
Amy's and James's and the Pat's and the whoever's of this world selling their online stuff. It is really important. And it's obviously, they've obviously crafted that message over time and they've obviously put time and effort and money into it. And it's not them writing it. Now, it could totally be their tone of voice and their values and their you know, what they stand for. But in order to connect that customer so that they continue to read, that's a real skill, isn't it?
Yeah. And as you grow your business, it's just, it doesn't end. It's not like you can write a sales page or your website copy and you're done. Then you create something new, as we're always creating new offers, and it starts again and you need a new Facebook ad copy and a new landing page. Mm-hmm. So it is an ongoing piece of your business that you can choose to improve and take classes and courses to improve your writing. Or you can decide to outsource it and rely on a couple people at different levels. The good thing about working with copywriters is you can find someone at every level and experience level and price point, so that if you're not running a six-figure business yet, you can still find someone who might be a little bit more green but isn't charging quite as much, and you can still get support.
Yeah, perfect. Kira, thank you so, so much. It's been such a pleasure having you on. Great talking to you about this. It's so, so important. And like I said, you know, it's an area that I think showing yourself up more is brilliant, and trying to do that in writing is a hard thing. So thank you so, so very much.
Thank you for having me. And I look forward to drinking some gin with you at some
point
soon.
For sure. Okay. What did you think? I thought that was really cool. I liked some of the advice she gave. Like I said, the authenticity thing is super important to me. Also the fact that basically, you know, we are all in crowded markets. There's not many of us, I don't think, that are listening that aren't in a market where this isn't already been done, or someone isn't already selling your product or service. So really, we are the only thing that stands out. There are lots of marketing podcasts out there. And if you didn't like me and my tone or my way I deliver things or the way I speak, then you would go and listen to another one. So I think that's the key thing, that if you're putting yourself out there and you're being authentic about it, then you're going to attract the people that you like and they like you. So I think it's a really positive thing. And if someone doesn't like you, then that's cool. They don't like you, and there's another product or service they could go and buy instead. So anyway, I really hope that helped. I will be back next week with a solo episode. At this point, I don't know what that is because we're several weeks in advance, but I will definitely be back and I will speak to you then. Take care. Thank you so much for listening to the Marketing That Converts podcast. And if you enjoyed this episode, then please do go check out teresaheathwaring.com, where you'll find more amazing content to help you grow your business.